Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are in the Virginia ratification. Actually, we're wrapping them up. I'm going to guess that probably in the next 2 days, episodes, maybe three. But that means that we would have a full set of weeks. In other words, because we started this on a Monday, we end on a Friday. That means, boom, we've got a full package of, let me see, 7-8 weeks, maybe? Anyway, I will let you know. And as a matter of fact, I will highlight on the podcast page which of the podcasts are of the ratification debates and the whole background and so forth, so that that way, if you're looking to put a book together, take the time and edit out the promos and the editorializing, or I should say at least the monologue on the front, and you can sit down and listen to the reading of the ratification debates from one state to the next. And for the most part, we're giving you the highlight, things that are important to stand out, such as the amendments that were provided by the few states that didn't really debate them, or at least we don't have any of their debates. For whatever reason, they were just never made accessible to the Elliott papers at the time. And Elliott papers, I think that Elliott, I don't forget the guy's name, full name, but it's called the Elliott papers. And I believe he compiled these in the middle of the 1800s. And so he had some of the states, but he didn't have all of them. And so, anyway, what we want to do is we want to go through the obligatory so we can get straight into some meat. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that provides you the academic and evidence-based solutions that we have to go through if we're going to save America, if we're going to save our Constitution. I want you to start looking at it this way, because I'm thinking about starting an information campaign telling people, because the baby boomers, those who are getting close either on Social Security, because it's a broad demographic, right? There's lots of people that are drawing on Social Security, and there's a lot of people that are going into drawing on Social Security. And I believe that one of the things that we need to probably use as an informational campaign is letting everybody know that Social Security is going to, you know, end when America fails. Because if you look at Greece, you look at every nation that has gone through financial failure, the Social Security, those who've been retired, because remember, those are the ones who were out in the streets burning everything down, and then they were told, okay, we're going to give you a portion of what you deserve. I want you to understand, that's going to happen here in America. And I am telling you that it doesn't have to happen. I've told you that if we initiate Republic Review will end the Social Security program, but it will not end the liabilities. We'll actualize those liabilities, because if we get rid of housing, if we get rid of labor, the Department of Energy, and all these other departments that are unconstitutional, clearly we will be able to have the money necessary to pay out that liability out to those Americans, at least at a minimum, maybe not the full liability, but at least what they paid into it. Now, again, I don't want people to get all up in arms. The fact of the matter is the federal government has no power to do this, so we do have to end this. We don't want the federal government getting involved in all of these things, because they've already proven the fact that they can't be trusted. They've already pilfered the till. They've gone into the Social Security bank or the vault several times. I remember in the 80s, a huge time, they took out billions of dollars. And I'm here to tell you, those people, if this would have been a private retirement system, the people that did that would have gone to jail. And so we can't allow, we can't trust them to do these things. We actually, you know, put this back into the civilian sector. And let your churches run this. If you want to have, if you want to, if you can't trust yourself to create your own retirement program, to be able to take care of yourself. And I know that there are people that kind of fall into that, but that's what the churches did. That's exactly that. They were the ones that did compassionate service, and they do it best because they actually care. It's not just a job, and it's not about statistics and numbers and making sure that, you know, hey, you got to make your numbers. You know, you got to get a couple of people off the rolls, and you got to add a couple of people. You know, the crap that they do in the social engineering by the federal government and even the state governments. Anyway, I told you I wasn't going to go down this long monologue, so let me stop. I'll stop myself right there. As you know, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And I know everybody is jonesing on the news. If we actually end, which I believe we will end probably this week, and if we do end on Friday, what that means is next week we'll be able to start providing you some marketing and other information and so forth. So what we'll do, because I will be going to Red Pill Expo. If you're not planning on going, then, well, that's too bad. We'll miss you, but you should really try to attend. I've already got some commitments from some state legislators that they're going to be there. The champion of the Constitution, probably the greatest champion that I know for the Constitution in South Dakota, Tony Randolph, Representative Randolph, he's going to be there. So we hope that you can at least poke your representatives to say, why aren't you, if they're really conservative, if they claim to be champions of the Constitution, you need to be poking them and saying, hey, you need to be there. But we're also probably going to be able to provide you some insights, because I told you there's some personal information and so forth we want to get into. And I'm hoping by that time we'll have enough information to be able to give you some of this stuff, because, you know, you probably noticed some things, and there's reasons for everything. There's always a reason for whatever happens, right? Anyway, so in our last, I'll say, readings out of the Virginia ratification base, it was Mr. Pendleton, and he was talking about the jurisdiction, common law, and so forth. And I know it got into the nuts and bolts of the jurisdiction, the appellate courts, and those types of things. I just want you to understand that these ratification debates really delineate what they can do and what they can't do. And, oh, by the way, there is a reason why the 11th Amendment exists, because the states did not like the federal government being able to just jump into their knickers, getting involved in all different cases. And so it didn't take long for the 11th Amendment to pass. And as a matter of fact, I'm trying to remember, I probably don't have it handy, and it probably won't tell me when passed. Okay, so this passed in 1795. So it does tell me. If you go to the Avalon Project, and if you want to get your Constitution and a lot of your constitutional documents, the Avalon Project is a great project. But I will tell you, if you look at Article 4 and some others, they have some incorrect wording for the Constitution. Don't know why or how, but anyway, the judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the states by citizens of another state or by citizens or subjects of any foreign state. In other words, they were basically saying, hey, the states are sovereign, and we don't need you to just jump in and claim jurisdiction on any of these things. So not to be construed. And you're going to hear, just remember, the 11th Amendment is in effect. And you're going to hear them talking about, and Mason, so we're going to be reading Mason at this next reading, will be George Mason, who's an anti-federalist. And he's going to be talking about jurisdictions and the problems. Can't we trust the states? Now, I believe we've already heard the federalists say, you know what, the states are going to have plenty to do, that the federal government isn't going to suck up all of these types of cases. Well, that really wasn't the case. And so that's one of the reasons why the 11th Amendment came out. See, if you've got a problem with the Constitution, you submit an amendment. And they didn't require a convention to create that amendment. It was obvious that the state said, hey, we've got a problem, and communicated to the other states and said, look, we've got to do this. Why is it today that there's this big, huge movement for the Convention of States, and there's no driving amendments to say, we've got to do this because we need these amendments? As a matter of fact, if you look at Mark Levin's Liberty Amendments, not one of those will really solve the problem. As a matter of fact, as far as I'm concerned, not one of them is a good amendment or a legitimate amendment that we really need. If we look at government, the polities, and with Republic Review moving forward, not one of those would probably even cut mustard. If we actually got the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution, we wouldn't need any of those. The problem is that Mark Levin and too many people accept this government overreach, and they want to kind of try to constrain it quasi and allowing overreach. That is the danger. That's one of the dangers of a convention, because the convention can legitimize. Hey, you had an opportunity when you guys convened and got all in the room, and not one of you complained that we were doing all of these things. You just wanted to create this balanced budget amendment to say, hey, we have to stay within our spending, but you never had a problem with what we were spending the money on. And now all of a sudden you're telling us you have a problem? See, that goes into collateral estoppel, that's contract law, and so anyway, you only have so many times at the well, and the subordinates are always protected. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so we're going to get into what Mason has to say, but back to this collateral estoppel. I know, so going into breaks, I always try to rush and jam some information out there. Collateral estoppel is obviously a term, it's a legal term that's foreign language, but basically what it does is it limits and protects a subordinate in a contract from being able to be raked across the coals and constantly basically harassed by a superior or by somebody else that says, hey, we got this contract with you, and you're constantly, you know, dragging us into court over all these little nuances and over the same issues, and you can't do that. So collateral estoppel is kind of like this, in contract law, this protection of the subordinate from being able to be dragged into court. If you start looking at what would happen if all of a sudden they created this perpetual convention of states, and then we tried to kick off republic review, well, if the convention of states didn't bring up all of the issues that needed to be brought up, because can we trust these people to do this? They're not even telling us what real amendment is going to solve this problem, because we know they don't have one. They've been doing this since the 80s, and for, 40-some years, they've not been able to provide or articulate, here is the silver or the golden amendment that'll get the federal government into the, you know, into check again. Because they're standing in state houses, trying to get state houses to go, hey, we've got this overreach and we've got this government encroachment on state rights. And the mechanism to do this is with the constitutional amendment process in a convention. No, if that was the case, if they actually felt that there was a mechanism or something they could do from a convention, they would be out there, because that would be a driver. I mean, everybody would be on board if there was this legitimate, and you know what? The real fact of the matter is, if they had a legitimate amendment, we wouldn't even need the convention, because everybody would agree that this is a legitimate amendment, period. This will fix the problem. The problem is that people, especially today, are starting to wake up and realize that the Constitution is not the problem. There is no reason to even have a conversation about petitioning for an Article 5 amendment, because they can't even come up with the solution. In other words, I'm telling state legislatures, before you even spend a minute in chambers, in a discussion, in a hearing over the Convention of States, make sure that somebody puts on the table a true, tangible amendment that is actually going to deal with the problem they're presenting. Don't give them a blank check to say, hey, we got this problem, but we don't know how to fix it, but we're going to get a bunch of smart people in the room, so just let us do this, okay? No, that's ludicrous. Anyway, back to what Mason was going to say. A discrimination arises between common law trials and trials in courts of equity and admiralty. In these two last, dispositions are committed to record, and therefore, on an appeal, the whole fact goes up. The equity of the whole case, comprehending fact and law, is considered, and no new evidence requisite. Is it so in courts of common law? Their evidence is only given via voice or via voca. I know not a single case where there is an appeal of fact as to common law, but I may be mistaken. Where there is an appeal from an inferior to a superior with the respect to matters of fact, a new witness may be introduced who is perhaps suborned by the party 1,000 miles from the place where the first trial was had. These are some of the inconveniences and insurmountable objections against the general power being given to the federal courts. Gentlemen will perhaps say there will be no occasion to carry up the evidence via voca, or via voca testimony, because Congress may order it to be committed to writing and transmitted in the manner with the rest of the record. It is true they may, but it is as true that they may not. But suppose they do, little conversant, and that's what he's saying, conversant as I am on this subject, or little knowledge that he has on the subject, I know there is a great difference between via voca evidence given at the bar and testimony given in writing. I leave it to gentlemen more conversant in these matters to discuss it. They also have cognizance in controversies to which the United States shall be a party. This power is superadded to there might be no doubt, and that all cases arising under the government might be brought forth in a federal court. Gentlemen will not, I presume, deny that all revenue and excise controversies, all proceedings relative to the duties of the officer of government from the highest to the lowest, may and must be brought by means to the federal courts, in the first instance to the inferior federal courts, and afterwards to the superior court. Every fact proved with respect to these courts to the court below may be revived in the Superior Court. But this appeal of jurisdiction is to be under the regulations of Congress. What these regulations may be, God only knows. Now, again, he's making it seem like this is a foreign entity, Congress, because the retorts that have come back each time they've gone down this, you know, this path, Congress is going to do this. Well, who's Congress? Congress is representatives of we the people and representatives of the state, our own states. It's not, these are not foreign entities. Well, today they are, because Congress is being bought and paid for by globalists. And this is why I'm becoming a huge advocate for making elections local again, getting all non-local money out of elections. You know, they tried to hamper corporations. They've tried to hamper these different entities. It's not about entities. It's about the synage. If you are running for an office in city council and your opponent is also running, but he is a leftist and there is money being poured in from other states, well, that's not representative. Because bottom line, the people should only be supported by those who they are to represent. In other words, the financial support should not be able to come in from outside the city boundaries. All money must be proven, to be made and to be, you know, or the origins of the money to come from within that city. And this is how we need to write the legislation to keep Washington, D.C., to keep globalists from injecting money into local elections. You want to take back our elections? This is the most important type of legislation. And people need to, if we have to do this by what we call citizens' initiatives and or ballot measures or what have you, this is what we have to do. Anyway, back to Mason. Mason says this, the jurisdiction further extends to controversies between citizens of different states. Now, we've already read the 11th Amendment. That's why I did this. Can we not trust our states with the decision of these? If I have a controversy with a man in Maryland, if a man in Maryland has my bond for £100, are not the state courts competent to try it? Is it suspected that they would enforce the payment if unjust or refuse to enforce it if just? The very idea is ridiculous. What? Carry me 1,000 miles from home, from my family and business, to where? Perhaps it will be impossible for me to prove that I paid for it. Perhaps I have respectable witness who saw me pay for the money, or pay the money, but I must carry him 1,000 miles to prove it, or be compelled to pay it again. Is there any necessity for this power? It ought to have no unnecessary or dangerous power. Why should the federal courts have this cognizance? It is because one lives on one side of the Potomac and the other lives on the other. Suppose I have your bond for £1,000. If I have any wish to harass you, or if I be of a litigious disposition, in other words, I like to go to court, I have only to assign it to a gentleman in Maryland. This assignment will involve you in trouble expense. What effect will this power have between British creditors and the citizens of this state? This is a ground on which I shall speak with confidence. Everyone who heard me speak on the subject knows that I always spoke for the payment of the British debts. I wish every honest debt to be paid, though I wish to pay the British creditor, yet I would not put it in his power to gratify private malice to our injury. In other words, by letting them drag you into court and then making you pay again. Let me be put right. In other words, you can put me right if I'm mistaken, because that's what he says. Let me be put right if I be mistaken. But there is not, in my opinion, a single British creditor but can't bring his debtors to the federal court. And so, anyway, that was his comments regarding common law and the whole jurisdiction. Now, Madison actually responds the day before, and then on the next day, this is what he goes into. And this is regarding common law as well. The second question, which I proposed to consider, was whether such organizations be made as would be safe and convenient for the states and the people at large. Let us suppose that subjects of its jurisdiction are only enumerated and power given to the general legislature to establish such courts as might be judged necessary and expedient. Now remember, the jurisdictions are only enumerated. Remember that, because that was the key thing. Do they have any enumerated power over marriage, over life, over energy, over education? If not, then the federal government has no jurisdiction over the matter. Anyway, here's some promos. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me reread that, because that first portion of this last sentence I read is really important. Let us suppose that the subjects of its jurisdiction, he's talking about the federal courts, are only enumerated, and power given to the general legislature to establish such courts as might be judged necessary and expedient. Do not think that in that case any rational objection could be made to it, any more than would be made to a general power of legislation in certain enumerated cases. If that would be safe, this appears to me better and more restrictive so far as it may be abused by extension of power. The most material part is the discrimination of superior and inferior jurisdiction and the arrangements of its powers, as where it shall have original and where appellate cognizance. Where it speaks of appellate jurisdiction, it expressly provides that such regulations will be made as will accommodate every citizen so as far as practical in any government. The principal criticism which has been made was against the appellate cognizance as well as fact of as law. I am happy that the honorable member who presides and who is familiarly acquainted with the subject does not think it involves anything unnecessarily dangerous. I think that the discrimination of fact as well as law may be satisfied by the discrimination of the civil and common law. But if gentlemen should contend that appeals as to fact can be extended to jury cases, I contend that by the word regulations, it is in the power of Congress to prevent it or prescribe such a mode as will secure the privilege of jury trial. They make no regulation to prevent such appeals entirely, or they may remand the fact or send it to an inferior contiguous court to be tried or otherwise preserve the ancient and important trial. Now, he goes on a little bit down the road here. He skip a couple of paragraphs. He talks more on jurisdiction. I have observed that gentlemen suppose that the general legislature will do everything mischievous they possibly can, and that they will omit to do everything good which they are authorized to do. If this were a reasonable supposition, their objection would be good. I consider it reasonable to conclude that they will as readily do their duty as deviate from it, nor do I go on the grounds mentioned by the gentleman on the other side, that we are to place unlimited confidence in them and expect nothing but the most exalted integrity and sublime virtue. But I go on with this great Republican principle that the people will have virtue and intelligence to select men of virtue and wisdom. Is there no virtue among us? If there be not, we are in a wretched situation. No theoretical checks, no form of government can render us secure. To suppose that any form of government will secure liberty or happiness without any virtue in the people is a chimerical idea. That's worth quoting, my friends, right there. You know, a lot of people talk, you know, use these other pithy notes. There you go. That is a hot one. If there be sufficient virtue and intelligence in the community, it will be exercised in the selection of these men so that they do not depend on their virtue or put confidence in our rulers, but in the people who are to choose them. In other words, we, the people. Having taken this general view of the subject, I will now advert to what has fallen from the honorable gentleman who presides. His criticism is that the judiciary has not been guarded from an increase of the salary of the judges. I wished myself to insert a restraint on the augmentation as well as the diminution of their compensation and supported it in the convention. But I was overruled. I must state the reason which were urged. They had great weight. The business must increase. If there was no power to increase their pay according to the increase of business during the life of judges, it might happen that there would be such an accumulation of business as would reduce the pay to most trivial consideration. This reason does not hold as to the president, for if the short period in which he presides, this cannot happen. His salary ought not, therefore, to be increased. It was objected yesterday that there was no provision for a jury from the vicinage. If I could have been done with safety, it would not have been opposed. It might also happen that a trial would be impracticable in the country. Suppose a rebellion in a whole district would not be impossible to get a jury. The trial by jury is held in a sacred as England is in America. There are deviations from it in England, yet greater deviations have happened here since we established our independence than have taken place there for a long time. Though it be left to the legislative discretion, it is a misfortune in any case that this trial should be departed from. Yet in some cases it is necessary. It must be, therefore, left to the discretion of the legislature to modify it accordingly to circumstances. This is a complete and satisfactory answer. It was objected that this jurisdiction would extend to all cases and annihilate the state courts. At this moment of time, it might happen that there are many disputes between citizens in different states. But in ordinary state of things, I believe that any gentleman will think that the far greater number of causes, 99 out of 100, will remain with the state judiciaries. All controversies directly between citizen and citizen will remain with the local courts. the number of cases with the jurisdiction of these courts is very small when compared to those in which the local tribunals have had cognizance. No accurate calculation can be made, but I think that any gentleman who will contemplate the subject at all must be struck with this truth. And then I like this because this happened a few times. Here, Mr. Madison, because this is a little in parentheses kind of note, here Mr. Madison spoke too low to be understood. And then once he started speaking louder again, they were able to capture more of his dialogue. But anyway, then Mr. Henry spoke, and he kind of jumped into this appeal at jurisdiction and so forth in common law. The appeal of jurisdiction as to law and fact, notwithstanding the ingenuity of gentlemen, still to me carries those terrors which my honorable friend described. He's talking about Mason. This does not include law in the common exception of it, but goes to equity and admiralty, leaving what we commonly understand by common law out altogether. We are told of technical terms that we must put a liberal construction on it. We must judge the common understanding of common men. Do the expression fact and law relate to cases of admiralty and chancery jurisdiction only? No, sir. The least attention will convince us that they extend to common law cases. Three cases are contradistinguished from the rest. Quote, in all cases affecting ambassadors and other public ministers and consuls and those in which a state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appeal of jurisdiction, both as to law and fact. Now, sir, what are we to understand by these words? What are the cases before mentioned? Cases of common law, as well as equity and admiralty. And so one thing Mr. Henry was pretty good at was he was pretty good at law, and he was pretty good at being able to point out these problems. I believe that it was pretty well wrung out going through the ratification debates that it wasn't necessarily an issue that they could really get their arms around to actually stop the ratification of the Constitution. But it ended up proving itself an issue shortly out the gate that the federal court, you have to understand, at the very beginning of this republic, John Jay was the Supreme Court justice. He was the chief justice. And he was asked if he would step down temporarily or for a trip to go and work out a treaty, I believe it was with Spain, over the Mississippi River, Louisiana, and so forth. And so he went out to do this treaty, and it became a botched deal. I mean, he came back with egg on his face. It was, you know, completely harangued. There was, you know, all these associated problems, and it kind of hurt his reputation. Well, when all things were said and done and, everybody kind of put dust onto the treaty or allowed dust to get on it because that problem was still existing, one of the things that happened, and I forget who it was that approached John Jay, but John Jay was approached to sit on the Supreme Court again. And they said, would you mind coming and sitting on the Supreme Court? And at that point, John Jay said, no, I don't see any value in me sitting on the court because that's a do-nothing job. There's hardly anything that we really do because they weren't supposed to do that much. The federal government was not supposed to do that much. And so John Jay looked at that job as a job of just a position of honor, but not really working. And so... just give you that as insight, because when one looks at the Supreme Court and the caseloads and everything else that they've got today, well, they had to aggrandize themselves. And that was John Marshall working very hard with the tutelage of Alexander Hamilton as to how to aggrandize the federal court in getting and expanding their jurisdiction. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so now we just brought up his name, John Marshall. We've not heard from him in a long time. Well, this is where John Marshall probably speaks the most. And so this is where he gets involved in the controversies because of his legal profession. And he says, Mr. Chairman, this is John Marshall. And let me see here. Mr. Henry spoke, then it was Mr. Pendleton, then it was Mr. Mason, and then we have Mr. John Marshall. And so this is, this again is probably all in line with common law jurisdiction and so forth. Mr. Chairman, this part of the plan before us is a great improvement on that system from which we are now departing. Remember, again, they're saying we're going into a new government, and that was an old government. Here are tribunals appointed for the decision of controversies which were before either not at all or improperly provided for. That many benefits will result from this to the members of the collective society. Everyone confesses. Unless its organization be defective and so constructed as to injure instead of accommodate the convenience of the people, it merits our approbation, our approval. After such candid and fair discussion by those gentlemen who support it, after the very able manner in which they have investigated and examined it, I conceived it could be no longer considered as so very defective, and that those who oppose it would be convinced of the impropriety of some of their objections. But I perceive they still continue the same opposition. Gentlemen have gone on an idea that the federal courts will not determine the causes which may come before them with the same fairness and impartiality with which other courts decide. Now, I'm going to pause right there. There is regional paradigms. And I will tell you that if you look at the makeup, I pointed this out in my book, if you look at the makeup of the Superior Court or the Supreme Court, it was interesting how the majority of those who were on the Supreme Court after, you know, Marshall with John John Adams, Midnight, you know, courts and those appointments, it was kind of interesting that many of them, that John Adams, an abolitionist, actually appointed slavery-supporting paradigm judges. Interesting, huh? And so when you have the ability to stack the court with a paradigm, let's say everybody on the Supreme Court today has a Harvard education, then you've pretty much put everybody into a capsule that has that Harvard paradigm of the viewing of law, the viewing of the Constitution, which is not what I would consider, you know, a true original construction. Now, this is why I'm going to throw it out here. I've already put it out to a lot of other people that I believe that if we successfully execute Republic Review, and we look at, because if Biden gets away with stacking the court, what the states will have to do, we cannot live with a stacked court. And when I say stacked court, that means that it'll be a paradigm court. It will be a court that will have an ideological agenda. And so what we'll have to do is we will have to amend the Constitution in moving the Supreme Court and its appointments back to the states. In other words, clearing out every single Supreme Court justice by amending the Constitution and replacing all justices except for the Chief Justice. So Roberts would be, you know, he would still maintain his position, but each state would then appoint for a 4-year or a 6-year period. I kind of like the 6 years, and then every 2 years, you know, have 1/3 of the court shift or potentially shift because they are elected positions. They're no longer lifetime positions. I truly believe that the lifetime position kind of made it more possible for judge or activism from the bench, from the courts. And so I believe that if we actually have 50 judges, then when they actually do a hearing of a case, you will actually not have a locked-in paradigm of Harvard or the Ivy School League paradigm of how to interpret the Constitution, but you will have a makeup, one that would be representative. And, oh, what do we have? We have a representative government. Why is it that our court is not representative of our government? Instead, it's representative of ideological ideas, the academic makeup. And we need to get away from that. It doesn't mean, because you have lawyers in every state that have gone to Harvard, but they don't necessarily represent the interest. And this is why when you actually look at the judges' decisions, you can remove them after 6 years and elect a new one, or actually not necessarily elect. I kind of like the idea of the governor appointing them with the advice and consent of the Senate of the state. And this gets, again, into the importance and allows us, we the people, to ensure that we have the ability to have better control over our government. Again, one that is representative of us, the people, throughout the republic. This way, each state, California, gets one vote on, you know, how they want their ideological paradigm that matches California to go against the rest of the nation. This really keeps it, actually, if you start looking at it, I think this is a brilliant idea in moving the court system into a better neutrality. And the only reason we keep the Chief Justice in the hands of the President with the advice and consent of the Senate is for tie-breaking. So if we have 51 states, then if the Chief Justice would make it 52, then the Constitution would have to allow for a temporary appointment of an alternate Chief Justice or a assistant Chief Justice for the period of time until we have an even number of states, and that judge can, you know, be let go and thanked for his service, and or possibly get rid of the standing Chief Justice. That's one way we get rid of Roberts. But anyway, I'm just throwing this out here to help plant the idea that we actually can improve on our
judicial process. This would actually force, and one of the things we would be doing in creating this large, because instead of having a physical court where you have to go into DC, we virtualize the court so that the judges actually sit in their state. And that the Chief Justice sits in Washington, D.C. He calls the, you know, convenes everybody together, and they go through the testimonies, and it's all done virtually. This way, if you're not happy with your particular judge in your state, you can get down to the Capitol and kind of say, hey, why are you making these kinds of decisions or pointing the arguments in these directions, so forth and so on. It makes them a little bit more representative of the people regarding the Constitution, because even though you're going to find that the Constitution really has and is black and white, the people themselves have to be identified as those who are either willing to ignore and obviate the Constitution, because you're going to get that in California. And I think that what we'll end up doing is we'll actually be moving the people to become far more educated on the Constitution, because now the people and the states have to be vigilant on the Constitution, especially after Republic Review, especially after getting the federal government back into the framework. How many people do you think, just ask yourself this question, how many people will really understand the Constitution once we've initiated and have gone through the full cycle of Republic Review? I'm going to tell you, it will be a baptism of fire. It'll be, you know, washing somebody with a fire hose, or trying to, you know, feed somebody, you know, giving, quenching their thirst by shooting a fire hose at their face. This will blow them away. There's going to be a lot of information, and people are going to get smart. Why? It's like cancer education. When somebody you know and you love comes down with some terrible ailment, what's the first thing most people do in the family? They get educated in how they can help, how they can be supportive, what they can do. This is the only reason why as many people who do not have any medical degrees understand cancer is because it has touched us that much. And I believe that when things really touch us, like the Constitution and enforcing the Constitution, I'm going to tell you, I believe that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to go, wow, we really need to understand this Constitution a lot better. And this forces, like I call it, cancer education. Everybody's going to see government is no longer going to be running every aspect of their lives, at least the federal government, and that the state government is going to be standing up these new powers. And that's what's going to really engage the citizens because, hey, you know, we don't want you to do it the way the federal government did it. We want you to, you know, run it this way or that way. And the people will get far more involved. They're going to get smarter on the Constitution. They're going to get smarter on civics because we're completely illiterate. But anyway, let me try to wrap up. Actually, I've got less than 10 seconds here. So I hope this is starting to make sense. And what I hope is as we go through these last bits and pieces, and the reason we're kind of covering the court here is because most people don't understand this. Republic Review has no involvement of the court. The court does not have the ultimate say. When it comes to matters of the Constitution, it's the states. This is why the states really need to be even involved in the judiciary. And so I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.